Greetings, everyone, and welcome back to the Mark Fraley Podcast. Today is Tuesday, October 23rd, 2018. This week it turned cold all of a sudden here in Nashville. It's time to get the potted plants off the patio and back inside. As we get started today, I wanted to remind people to find and like the Facebook feed for the Mark Fraley Podcast. And this is the one way in which you can make yourself aware of new episodes when they are published. If you want to be really sure of being notified of new episodes, find us on iTunes, podcasts, and subscribe. This will make available to you for easy browsing and downloading all of the episodes published so far. If you would like to receive an email notice when a new podcast is published, please send me an email directed to markfraleypodcast, all one word, at gmail.com. And I will try to get an email out to each of you when a new podcast is published. When I first moved to Nashville in fall of 1978, I became acquainted with the organization called the Tennessee Environmental Council. At that time, TEC was an umbrella organization consisting of a dozen or more affiliated organizations, including Audubon, Sierra Club, the Native Plant Society, and others. And these groups gathered together for operational support and for policy advocacy in the state legislature. Today, this group is more active than ever, with an outstanding professional staff and a wide range of projects from all over the state. If you're not familiar with the group, I would certainly encourage you to check out their website and get on their Facebook feed. The board of directors is an impressive group, and their project list is very diverse. On today's program, I get together with my old friend Jeff Berry, now the chief operations officer of TEC, and discuss two of their current projects. First, an ambitious statewide tree planting program, and next, their new effort focused on composting. And so I hope you'll enjoy my interview with Jeff Berry. Jeff Berry, welcome to the Mark Fraley Podcast.
Hey, thank you, Mark. Good to be here.
Jeff, it's great to have you here. You are a person that I've known for a good while. This goes back to the old days of the Trust for the Future and old friend Charlie Howe. Mm-hmm. But I guess that many of our listeners will not know you. I know that you're presently one of the executives at the Tennessee Environmental Council.
My title is Chief Operations Officer.
All right. Tell us about your history. I know a little bit about it, but let our listeners know a little more about how you got into this work and what you've been doing.
Yeah, hey, thanks for the opportunity. Well, I've been an environmentalist my entire life, as far as I know, as far as I can remember, picking up trash at the lake and the mountains in California with my parents, and just because we cared about it. But I rode a bicycle here from Los Angeles in the year 2000, and I was showcasing a documentary film that I had produced. I'm a filmmaker and went to UCLA with a degree in environmental studies in the early 1990s. I graduated in 1993, made a series of documentary films about environmental issues, and took one about oil drilling in Alaska across America on a tour by bicycle.
Okay.
Followed by
promoting the movie.
Promoting the film and getting people involved in that issue in Congress.
Okay.
And I was followed by one of the first Toyota Priuses ever driven in America in the year 2000. And this is before they were being sold in America, in fact. It was a Japanese model. And a 4,600-mile bike journey across America from Los Angeles to Washington, D.C., and then moved to Nashville immediately after that. So that would have been July.
That's when I met you.
Yeah. Right after that.
Right.
Thanks to Charlie Howe, and it was, we've collaborated on many things, you and I, over...
Then you got into a project called Kilowatt Hours.
That's right.
Tell us about that.
Well, that was the first film I produced after moving to Tennessee, and I was invited to explore, through documentary filmmaking, the issue of where do we get our electricity? When you turn on the lights, where does that come from? And a lot of it comes from the coal mines of West Virginia and other areas in America. But I wanted to illustrate that it's so benign when you turn on the light switch, but there are consequences, and there are better ways of providing that same service, more efficient and renewable.
That's a wonderful film, and I encourage listeners to search it out. I imagine if you search hard enough, you can still it's still out there. You could to be a great film for a church group or just as a basic education about energy conservation.
Yeah, it was. It is, and it's if you just Google kilowatt hours, and it's O-U-R-S without an H. It's hour electricity.
Right.
You will find ways to watch it online.
Super. All right. Well, let's fast forward to today, and you're involved with the Tennessee Environmental Council and leadership role there. You know, my first involvement with TEC was back in the late 70s, early 80s, when it really was a coalition of various conservation and outdoor recreation organizations that each of them didn't have the capability of having an executive director or an organizational, and the TEC became that focus point, also for lobbying in the legislature for issues of conservation. But it's kind of changed in the way that it does business over the years. Tell us who you are and what generally what you're up to.
Yeah, and part of the reason it's changed is because a lot of those groups and new groups that were formulated under the Tennessee Environmental Council's umbrella, including the Recycling Tennessee Recycling Coalition, the Clean Energy Organization, as well as the Conservation Voters, and several others, were all sort of spin-offs of the council.
Right.
But all of those organizations and many others that were on our founding board, our founding charter, have matured and gained in their own strength and ability to raise funds, so they all have their own operations now. So coming together and sharing a voice is still important, and we invite people every year to come together for our policy and practice meeting, where we look at all the priorities of all the groups that are working on issues related to the environment and conservation and how we can collaborate in those. So we still do quite a bit of that work, but we've expanded into our own programmatic work, the Tennessee Tree Project, planting a million trees in Tennessee, the Watershed Support Center, which is restoring creeks and water waterways across Tennessee, as well as Sustainable Tennessee, which is which includes a recycling program that we're advocating, as well as composting through our Compost Your Compost campaign.
Well, in the limited time that we have today, I want to focus on just a couple of those.
Sure.
And we may have to come back and have you talk about some of the others.
That'd be cool.
Before we do that, though, you talked about a policy workshop. Is that coming up?
There was. It's every August, in the last week of August.
Okay.
But we're doing a repeat in November, because there was always a lot of interest in people continuing that dialogue. Once a year just isn't enough, as we build momentum in that meeting and all these great ideas and energy come out of that. And so we're doing another one on November 13, I believe is the date. I said the Shelby Bottoms Nature Center.
Okay.
But anything I talk about related to the Tennessee Environmental Council on this podcast, just visit our website. It's all on there, tectn.org, and you can register for any of our events that way.
Terrific. And that would be open to the public. Do they have to pre-register, or best to pre-register?
Registration is strongly encouraged.
Okay.
We know how much room we need to have the event.
Excellent.
We usually end up with about 35 to 45, sometimes 50 people attend that.
Okay.
And it does fill up the room. But we definitely want people to register. We serve lunch. The food is always great. We get high
remarks on our food.
so that's a good thing, a bonus.
Jeff, you've got a couple things in the works that relate to trees that I really would like to talk about.
Yeah.
You have a promotion going on right now, which is an Arbor Day tree sale type of a promotion. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, and so really the best time to plant a tree is now,
of course.
The second best time is early November. We call that the beginning of tree planting season. It happens to coincide with Veterans Day, so we like to kick off tree planting season with an opportunity for people to plant a tree in honor of a veteran, a military veteran, or first responder, or public servant, the people that are working on our behalf every day. And so it's been pretty popular. People sign up to plant a tree, and they most often tell us who they're planting in honor of. And it just feels good to offer trees and plant trees for U.S. veterans.
So people that are interested can find a list of those trees that you have, that you're making available?
Yeah, again, it's on our website, tectn.org. And if you click on the Veterans Day link on there to sign up for that, we will show the trees that we're offering, pawpaws, bur oaks, I believe sycamore, and a couple others. And they're all listed there. You can choose whichever one you want and how many of each you want as well. And we ship them out. So anybody in Tennessee or even in the region could sign up for those, and we'll ship them out in time for Veterans Day.
Super.
Or you could come by to Nashville to our office and pick them up. And that's all described in the registration.
Are these bare root trees? Is that what you've got going on?
Yeah, we're still offering bare root seedlings. And there are a couple reasons why we do bare root seedlings, because they're going to survive better. When you plant them when they're really young, they get well established, and they learn their environment more intimately.
Adapt.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
But also, they're easier to ship and to transport large numbers of seedlings. And we realize if we're going to plant 1 million trees, according to our goal of the Tennessee Tree Project, we've got to have mass tree planting offerings for people. And we often call it reforestation, if you would. Tennessee has a lot of trees. Over half of our land area is covered in forests and trees and canopy. But they're being lost every year to a variety of factors, development being one, but even the industries that cut down trees, but even pests. And that's probably one of the largest natural causes of tree losses, the largest category of why trees are dying, because of certain insects, as well as fires and lightning strikes and things like that. Believe it or not, it's a pretty large number.
Well, we have trees, a lot of trees out in the rural areas, but sometimes where we need them the most, we don't have them in the urban areas, mm-hmm. Right?
So most people that plant trees for our events are in the urban areas, and in an area in like Nashville where there's a lot of houses being built, there are a lot of trees being cut down. So we end up planting more in Middle Tennessee, but we hit every county in Tennessee, and no matter where you are, if you plant a tree, it's in a watershed.
That's somewhere, watershed.
It's
exactly.
In a watershed somewhere. So that tree is improving the environment, the water quality for everyone downstream.
Super. So if a person wants to get involved with that, they just need to go onto your website and click on the appropriate link and get started from there. Or can they call into your office about that?
Yeah, we have a phone. It's 615-248-6500.
Okay.
And I know in the age of technology, I don't have to say that 10 times because you can pause and rewind.
That's right. So now, again, along the lines of trees, I remember that last year you had a goal of planting 250,000 trees.
Yeah.
And I know that you didn't quite make that goal, mm-hmm. but you got darn close.
Yeah.
190,000
so. You've done your research.
I looked it up before we got started. Now, when is that event or program? When is the timeline for that, and how can people get involved with that?
We organize 250K Tree Day to take place last Saturday of every February. And this is the largest tree planting we've ever done, and it's the largest that takes place in America as far as a community tree planting event where people get together and plant trees.
Right.
And so it's the last Saturday in February. It's cold, and it's usually there's rain before and after sometimes on the day of the event, but that's why we plant that time of year as well. We can't get that many seedlings in November, so just because of the way the nurseries operate, most trees still have their leaves on them, so we can't pull them out of the ground.
Sure. In order to get a bare-rooted tree now, they have to artificially induce dormancy.
Yeah.
And then they need to it's best practice to have them kept refrigerated and et cetera.
All that.
But in February, trees are naturally in dormancy.
Yeah.
And so you can really go whole hog on the tree planting.
Yep.
Now, this is not a program where one individual plants one tree.
No, usually one individual plant 3, 4, or 5 trees, sometimes 10 trees. Right. Yeah.
So it's best like for a Boy Scout troop or a Rotary Club or some bigger organization to say, okay, we're going to commit to doing this particular project.
Yeah, and last year the Rotary Club, the Rotary Club was involved, and the Boy Scouts are in different groups are involved, even Girl Scouts, a lot of churches. Austin Peay University is one of the bigger tree planting stakeholders, if you will.
Okay.
Stormwater agencies across the state. There are other nonprofit organizations. And so anybody can sign up. You can sign up and get 4. The seedlings come in bundles of 4.
Okay.
And there's 4 species of trees. A red oak.
Okay.
A red bud. A wild plum or a similar type of fruit tree, like a smaller tree. And then the 4th one is the pine. So there's the evergreen in there, the conifer.
Okay. Okay.
And so you can plant them in your backyard. You can plant them in your front yard or alongside your house. So a lot of people that sign up are just private landowners and have a residential property. So we want anybody who is interested in planting a tree to come on board and participate.
You know, but to get the best bang for the buck, a volunteer involvement, you really want people to be making a commitment to do 1,000 trees or you know, 200 trees or
some number
like that that's larger than 4.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's amazing. I mean, the 4 trees count, but
of course
we have those a number of people that sign up that end up reserving 50 or 100 trees or sometimes 1,000, like you said.
Okay.
And they do larger events
where
they have volunteers in their community, and we're totally open to that we encourage that as well.
Can you give an example of someone last year that did a larger event that was kind of a success or noteworthy?
Yeah, there are several. Well, and the one I already mentioned was Austin Peay, and I believe they planted 1,500 trees. There's another, and so that's up in Clarksville.
On their campus?
Their campus has some property that they want to reforest.
Okay.
So several acres, like 40 or 50 acres, where they want to plant lots and lots of trees. So they had about 100 plus volunteers at that event.
Wow.
And so that's one of those bigger events. And there was a group in I think it's called Smoky Mountain Roots, or there's a group in the Smokies that in Gatlinburg, where they are reforesting the areas that were burned a couple years ago.
That's right.
And they planted well over 1,000 trees with volunteers in that community. So it's remarkable and heartwarming to see so many efforts across the state that step up. And because we have made this offering available, people come out of the communities and do it, and they plant.
So trees. Do you get these trees from private nurseries, or do you get them or is the state forestry department involved?
Yeah, we do get the trees, a lot of them, from the state nursery, which is in Polk County near Chattanooga, Cleveland area.
Hiawassee area.
Yeah, that's right.
Right.
And so they do a great job of growing millions of seedlings every year, and they provide those for pulp and paper mill companies and forestry companies and anybody who wants to get a tree, basically. But we're able to get them at a good price by getting a large number of them, and we get them out to people to plant.
Dynamite.
We do get some of them from Missouri, and they have a number of native species there, and sometimes local nurseries like Hillis over in McMinnville.
This is terrific. Now, if you're looking to do this in February, which Saturday in February is? Saturday in February.
This one coming up is February 23rd.
Yeah. So folks that want to do this sort of a project need to get on the stick right now and start getting organized about it and getting in contact with you. Or is there another key person at your office that they should talk to?
Right. They could contact me, or Cynthia Hernandez is the program specialist that takes care of the event. We work collaboratively on that because it's a big undertaking. But people can register right now. It's open for registration. You can order your seedlings. We're asking for a $2 donation per seedling, because it does cost money to put on the program, and that's how we make it happen.
I got it.
Whenever people want to sign up, it's open to do that. Registration on our website.
Are there people around to instruct people on how to properly plant a tree?
There are. In fact, there are lots of great videos on that, and we have one that one of your listeners goes to our website and goes through the registration process, there is a video you watch in that process.
Okay.
So it's there. It's a YouTube video. Our CEO, John McFadden, is actually planting the seedling in that video showing how it's done. It's so easy to plant a seedling, a bare root. You dig a hole about dinner plate size and about a foot deep, which is the depth of a spade, a shovel.
Right.
And you put it in there and cover up the roots.
Right.
And they take. It's amazing.
Yeah. And if there's water available, a little bit of water to keep them hydrated is helpful.
We do encourage watering. At that time of year, usually there's so much rain and snow.
Sure.
And or snow.
A little muggy.
Yeah. We've planted on days when it's been muddy. And,
right.
And so there's a lot of moisture in the ground, but sometimes there's a warm, dry spell. And so watering it is a good idea, and we even encourage some mulch around it,
sure.
A donut shape around
sure.
The seedling.
Sure.
It helps retain moisture.
Excellent. Well, all right. So this is a great event. That's a lot of trees to plant, 190,000 trees in 95 counties.
It's
a logistical feat to do that. Absolutely.
And I'd like to talk about that because we have volunteers who register to help distribute those trees.
Okay, so there's another volunteer opportunity.
Yeah, but we've closed that because
okay.
We need to know where those locations are before people sign up. So when somebody goes to our website, tectn.org, and registers for that event, you select where you're going to pick up your seedlings of the day before or the day of the event,
okay.
February 23rd.
Okay.
And we find as many of those locations as possible. They are run by volunteers, often with the UT Agricultural Extension offices. Some rural electric co-ops are participating.
Terrific.
Churches, Boy Scout groups, all kinds of people step up to do that. And so it's all volunteer. We have 160 of those locations across the state. And when you register, you pick your location. They'll have the seedings there for you. They'll even make sure that you're picking them out properly and wrapping the roots. And that's a very important point that I emphasize all the time, is that when you take those seedlings out of the package, bring a Kroger bag or a Walmart plastic bag. And wrap the roots immediately, because if they dry out, they will die. And they don't survive without being airtight. So, and as soon as you can get them in the ground, the better.
Yeah, a little 5-gallon bucket
mm-hmm.
with a little water in it is not a bad idea.
Yeah, a lot of people do that.
Yeah.
It really helps. And often the distribution centers will dunk, when people pick up their seedlings, they'll dunk them in the water in a 5-gallon bucket.
Right.
Wrap them in a little paper towel to hold that moisture in a plastic bag. And then they're good. You can actually hold them like that as long as they're shaded and cool for days or weeks. But we definitely want people to get them in the ground
as soon as possible. Absolutely. All right. Well, let's move on. Folks that are interested in that, get on your website.
Mm-hmm.
Get in touch. It's a terrific thing. The other thing that I've seen that's come across information-wise about your activities presently is a composting project.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really kind of intrigued, and not surprised necessarily, but intrigued about
mm-hmm.
this. Tell us what's going on with your composting project.
Oh, I love that project. It's brand new. We just launched it in September, and it's funded in part by grants from TDEC, the Tennessee Department of Environment and Conservation, as well as Kroger, their Zero Waste, Zero Hunger initiative. And we're looking for other sponsors of that as well. But as you know, composting, you and I understand the concept. If you put vegetables that you're not going to eat because they're rotting or the scraps from making a salad, whatever, you put that in an area in your yard with a little bit of brown matter, like some dead leaves or whatever, maybe even some paper, it'll break down and turn into a soil amendment. It turns into a rich soil amendment that you can spread in your garden. And it looks like it's soil, basically.
Right.
And so it's an incredible process. And I've been doing it since I was a kid. Even in the suburbs of Los Angeles, we
right.
did that.
Right.
And we never had to throw grass clippings in the trash because we threw them in the compost pile along with all our food waste. And so it's second nature for me to throw those scraps from the kitchen in the compost pile. It doesn't feel right to throw them in the trash.
So what is, fundamentally, what is the reason why the Tennessee Conservation and Environment Department
mm-hmm.
would be interested in this at all?
Well, they call it organics management, and an enormous amount of space in our landfills, believe it or not, is taken up by food waste.
Okay.
And even in kitchen scraps, it's a lot of weight, it's a lot of volume. It does not break down in the landfill, it gets buried, and it's just in that inert state. I mean, it turns to methane over time. But it's just an enormous, it's taking up a lot of space in the landfill. So that's the probably the number one reason TDEC is promoting this.
Okay.
And up to 40% of all the food we create in America is not eaten. It's either thrown away.
That's a shame.
It's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Think of all the energy and agriculture and all the manufacturing of all those foods that we see on the grocery store shelves and the restaurants. And 40% of that is not eaten. It's just wasted.
Well, in the waste stream, Jeff, is not just the landfill. It's also the sewage treatment plant.
Yeah.
Because, you know, many people, those kinds of things go down the disposal hall in the kitchen sink,
mm-hmm.
and it goes down to the sewer plant, and it's really not, it's not the kind of thing that really needs to be treated at the sewer plant.
Right, not at all.
So it's a waste of energy and time, and sometimes our sewer plants are over capacity as it is.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, Nashville.
Yeah. Yes,
so, to the extent we can keep stuff out of the sewer line, mm-hmm. and out of the dump,
mm-hmm.
the landfill, that's a good thing. But tell us, how are you all organizing to do this? Is this just a promotional thing, or tell us how you all are delivering a program?
Right. Well, that's a great question. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about it because
yeah.
it's a great. We've learned that we want to make these kind of practices like planting trees, recycling, and composting available to anyone who is interested in it. And so anybody in Tennessee can sign up for Come Post Your Compost. That
it's called what now?
Come Post Your Compost.
Okay, all right. That's
so
okay.
Come on, everybody. We want you to start composting, and then we want you to put it up on social media so we can see pictures of you and your compost.
I got it.
So it's creating a social media community of people that are doing this.
Okay.
And we have about 100 people signed up already, and which is we're right on track to meet
what,
our
on
our
a Facebook
goals.
Page or is it?
Yeah, well, again, it's on our website. You
okay.
register on our website. There's a
okay.
link on our homepage where you can click on there, and then this really cool map shows up of Tennessee where you click on your county because we want people to have access to the resources in their community.
Okay.
So each county in Tennessee, there are 95 counties,
right.
has its own homepage. It's all accessible on our website, easy to find, easy to get signed up, and you can actually get free supplies like a compost pail. We always encourage the donations for that too. It helps cover the costs of that.
Okay.
And there are prizes. Every couple weeks we give out a prize depending on how well you're composting. We give it to based on merits as well as just random drawings because we want it to be fun. So that's in a nutshell. Our goal is to get 1,000 people composting by the end of next year, 2019.
Well, that seems achievable.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And we will ship all the materials to you, or if you're already composting, you can also sign up as an existing composter and you can help us reach our goals of 60 tons diverted from our landfills by the end of next year by counting your totals.
So if you're a person with a little bit of a backyard like
mm-hmm.
I have,
yep.
All it really requires is identifying just a little bit of a corner of a space out of the way.
Yeah, a circle 2 feet in diameter, essentially. It's really all the space you need. You
sure.
can make it bigger, you can make it smaller, but you need
it doesn't need to, doesn't, wouldn't be a good thing for it to be in the sunshine necessarily.
Yeah, that would in the summertime especially that would dry it out.
Right.
And it'd
so
slow down
little,
the compost process.
A little bit of a shaded area would probably be a
mm-hmm.
good thing.
Shade helps. And
yeah.
it, again, it's not necessary. If you have a compost pile in full sun and you dump your, let's say, your watermelon rinds or your old pumpkin, it's Halloween, right? And so, of course, when people listen to this, it might not be Halloween anymore, but right now, we're coming up to the fall season, so there's going to be a lot of pumpkins in the trash, but we want those in the compost pile. But if you throw a few leaves on top of it,
okay.
it does protect it and it helps it break down better because it won't be hit by the sun as much, right? It's funny, but composting is really easy. I just dump my scraps in a pile. I don't think about it. And I just do it out of habit. A few times a week, I dump everything out there, and nature takes care of the rest. But to improve or increase the success of it, it helps to dump the brown matter in there. And then to poke holes in it, take a pitchfork to it every or a spade or shovel.
Maybe kind of mix a little soil in with it as well.
Mix a little soil, move it around a little bit because it helps to get the air.
Right.
But I'll be honest, I haven't done much to mine to maintain it, and I still get great soil out of it.
You know, what we do at our house, and we live in a house that was built 60 years ago, 65 years ago, and the waste lines that take the waste from to the street, particularly from the sink, don't function as well as a new house would. Mm-hmm. So we keep a bin next to our sink, and rather than putting things down the disposal, we put them in this little bin.
Yep.
And you know, each evening we take it out, and I have another little 5-gallon bucket type bin with a lid. Mm-hmm. We put that on there, and then once or twice a week I'll take it back to the compost pile and bury it, basically.
Yeah.
And maybe, and as if there are leaves available or wheat straw or
straw,
something like that.
Shredded newspapers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Shredded stuff from your shredder that you use in your office.
Sure, that works too.
That'll break down. That cellulose in there will break down with it. And we get a pile. And of course, we do not put our leaves on the curb. Mm-hmm. We use all those leaves and grass clippings and even weeds we pull from the garden get back in the compost pile. Uh-huh. Ideally, you'd want that pile to achieve a little bit of a heat, but not doesn't always happen.
Not necessary, but because it'll break down
with
other natural processes. When we had one in California, we had a really rich lawn and we put our grass clippings in there and that thing would get hot.
Right.
And if you look at the industrial size composting facilities around Nashville, there is heat that comes off those. Those get very hot.
Right.
In fact, I think 200 degrees or in the high hundreds.
Yeah, well, they'll get hot enough to pasteurize essentially the material so that you don't have the problems with pests and bad organic type stuff.
Yeah, and so there is a science to it. If you get the right mix, it will generate heat because there's a chemical decomposition going on.
Right.
But the average person just dumping a few food scraps in there a couple times a week won't have that. And that's interesting that you actually take your leaves in the fall and put them in there as well, and grass clippings.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the way to do it. That's to the fullest.
Yeah. I mean, to the extent that, you know, when I see people's bagged leaves on the curb, I think, what are these people thinking?
Mm-hmm. All that resource.
All that resource to be... I don't know what happens to those bagged leaves. I guess Metro has a program for composting those. But
thankfully, they do.
Yeah,
the green waste program.
But people can do that at home. So, all right. So, again, if a person wants to get involved with this or learn more about it, they can get on your website.
Yep, that's right. We've learned that the website is a great tool, a great portal. And we have all these programs accessible. If it's not there on the homepage, you can scroll to the very bottom and there's a button that says "See all our campaigns," and they're all listed there. They have a nice thumbnail with a little picture and a description about what they are. But we want people to register, and I encourage all your listeners to sign up for the prizes. Sign up for composting. Sign up for trees. You'll be eligible for the prizes from the composting campaign. But you know, the thing about the trees, getting back to that briefly, is that there's such a return on that investment. A seedling costs $2, right, through our program as a donation. But the estimated value of that tree over time, I have a few notes here. We've done some research and calculations on it, and these are all studies that have been done by other organizations. But the estimated clean air value of one tree is $62,000 over 50 years.
Sure, absolutely.
Because if that tree grows to maturity, it's there for decades, right? And think of the air, the carbon that's removed from the atmosphere, the oxygen that's put back out. That's just what trees do. And there's value to that.
You know, Jeff, I would like people on both of these projects to perhaps think about it as a learning opportunity for young folks. Mm-hmm. I think too few of our children are learning about the outdoors and about how we are connected to the environment that's around us with, mm-hmm. through the trees and even through these organic things that can be composted.
Absolutely, yeah. So, and that's the cool thing about the compost is the other end of the cycle, right? When you're done with the apple core or the orange peels, it's not something, it's not trash that should be buried in a landfill. I mean, that's what it is currently, but it's a resource that would turn into soil and would feed our gardens. And there's this is a beautiful process.
Right. We definitely get significant soil product.
That's right.
That we use in our garden and, mm-hmm. and around the and, you know, in potted plants and all that sort of thing.
If you could put if you could bag your compost, Mark, you can compare it to what a bag of soil amendment costs at the store. You know, there's dollar value to it.
Sure enough.
And, you know, of course, you're not doing it to make money, but right. it is a valuable resource that you're creating right. just by letting it do its natural thing.
Right. All right. Well, Jeff, thank you so much for being on the podcast today.
Yeah. And, it's great to see you, Mark, and it's nice to connect after all these years.
Great to have you by. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, Mark.
All right.